Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about what's going on out in the field, looking at some GDUs as well. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at women shaping ag in some digital publications. Ag History Minute, we'll talk the history of GDUs. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. So here we are, sitting approximately 17 to 20 miles away from the biggest thing in football happening in the next week.
First day will be over.
By this time next week it will be.
Are you talking the Tilth Corn League draft? Is that what you're talking about, Matt?
Yes. Or the most important thing to football. I was more thinking the NFL draft.
Okay.
The Fantasy Corn League draft will be completed, I think. By
We're trying to get ahead of them, Be better than them.
But the NFL draft will linger for a few days in the Green Bay area for what will be very interesting to see what kind of weather we get, so far it looks like it's good, but things can change.
There won't be snow.
It'll be warm enough. It probably won't snow. It's like during the day.
60s, I think.
Do you remember?
And 40s at night.
Do you remember when we hosted Tech Days and you had all this preparation? And then.
Yes.
And we had the full gamut of weather from start to finish.
And you don't know how many people to expect. You don't know how parking's going to go. And I just feel like the draft is like that, but on an even more massive scale.
The only good part that's different here is you probably have more direction from above. Like the NFL is probably telling Green Bay, like, this worked, this didn't. Whereas,
I do think there is some, obviously, and this is just what you... Just what you hear from, say, police officers or people in that area that, obviously NFL to come in and build. If you've seen that stage they're building, it's massive. I mean, it looks, there are people working 24/7 to build the stage.
Yeah.
It's basically building a whole, it's not even a stage. It's like a 90-foot tall and it's huge.
It looks like
a massive building, basically.
It's not a stage. They're actually going to cover the people that are going to watch
the
stage.
Right. So it's this... Huge
amphitheater,
production.
Basically.
Yeah, it is.
I'm actually surprised that isn't with the backdrop of Lambeau. Because the backdrop is the Resch.
Right. It sounded like they wanted to be the people. They're going to pan out to the people, and then you'll see that the Vince Lombardi, the huge one in Lambeau.
Sure.
So if they built it in front, you'd block it. All of Lambeau.
So when they look out at the people, you're going to see all that.
Right.
That's fair.
What I can't believe, though, is they built it in the road. So... In a way, like, it's just a huge, massive structure that could have been used for something when they're done. Who knows what? It just seems wild to me.
It's on Oneida?
Right.
It's on Lombardi and Oneida. It's on the intersection. It's not just on one road.
Enough of it took up the road. So it's just an interesting whole thing that...
I think the...
Watching them take it down will be interesting, too, and what happens to it.
When you look at that area, though, Todd... Behind there, like to the north, is residential. It's all residential.
Right.
You have what the Packers have been doing over the last few years, building up that Titletown district. So really, to put an existing structure, it would have to be further away. Like you couldn't get that close to Lambeau.
Correct.
There's no
way.
You've
got the Resch and the arena kind of there. You've got Lambeau there. And then...
Agreed with you. I don't know where you would even
really
put it to make that work. It's just wild to me that's...
You'd have to, you can't put it on the north side. There's not enough room.
Right.
You'd have to put it in the southeast corner if you wanted to do something else.
If anything.
Right in front of the Hudson.
I would have thought,
right, they could use it as a practice facility after,
rewind to before they had that Tundra tailgate zone there.
Right.
Like, that side of the parking lot.
Right.
Is probably almost big enough. Like, you probably would have bleed out into Oneida Street, but you could have taken up that whole section of the parking lot with Lambeau behind you and done it if that wasn't there. But because that's there and is pretty heavily used, Yeah, there just really wouldn't be anywhere to go. But
are you guys going?
My
did
son
you down. Did you download
I'm,
the NFL?
I'm still
One
a maybe,
app.
A very strong maybe. But yeah,
my,
are
my
you
son
going
really
to
wants to go, and he's like trying to bug me to go, and I haven't done anything yet, but he wants me to go.
Are you going, Bill?
Doubtful. I'm a strong. What's the opposite of a strong maybe? Like, there's a chance, but...
Like, meh, minus.
Meh, minus. Yeah. I've talked to a lot of people that are going. They're like, why aren't you going? You're never going to see this again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because I don't want to fight all the crap.
It's only 32 teams. It's hard happen in our lifetime.
Yeah, right. And it is hard not knowing what it really is going to be like down there, because there is definitely mixed signals of, like, there's still a lot of Airbnbs open. There's hotel rooms still open. Like, is because it's a free event, is it just going to be people with their kids and family just milling around like a state fair down there? Right. Versus is there going to be this huge crowd from other places, which is probably going to be a little bit of both.
I think if I go, I'm going to go Saturday.
Saturday would be the best. Yeah.
I would think by then, you know, it's cleared out. And
yeah.
Yeah. Half tempted. The curling club sent an email. They're looking for people to help park cars. Like, yeah, go to that for a couple hours and then, like,
mosey over,
wander away.
So I was wondering, do you think you can park your car there for?
Well, it says to arrive early.
Yeah,
so I would think
that's what I was like,
planning.
Where
on
do you park?
So can you get to grilling tonight?
Well, they've
our had, season's done.
Yeah, and they took the ice out
done,
early
yeah,
and everything because
yeah,
they
yeah,
figured.
You're done.
Yeah,
but they're just their lot will be open for parking.
Yeah, $100 a day. A lot of them down there, $100 a day. But the hardest is going to be getting into some of those places, isn't
right?
Going
to just
be
the either. Traffic. I mean, even if they get half the people they're expecting, the right. traffic's going to be a nightmare
just to get in and out. But it'll be a steady. Potentially, it's not like a game time thing. Somewhat is obviously there's a start time, but like end time too. I think like after the Packers pick Thursday night, I'm sure you'll see a lot of people just leave and then there's even like out of Milwaukee. I think it was Potawatomi. You can get they've got like buses all over.
I've heard that.
Here's
too,
an example.
Yeah.
It's like there you can, they're going to have like a bus.
Just jump on a bus.
Jump, yeah, and come drop you off. And so it'll be a lot of different ways. I was wondering if like the Oneida Casino, I'm sure, is going to have where you can park there and jump on a shuttle bus and stuff. From the airport, I'm sure they're going to have to shuttle people. It's cool that the anticipation now is starting to set in of like, what is it even just going to be like? Like Bill, we're all like 20 miles ish away. Like, are we gonna be affected?
I'm curious what 41 is gonna look
right.
like.
I think it's gonna be nuts.
Like, it's bad enough commuting some mornings. Just add,
right?
And even think about 41 on a game day.
Yeah,
like that'll get backed up almost to Appleton.
Right.
Sometimes. Now, like what? That's 70,000.
And all your normal routes for like. Getting out of a game are shut down.
Yeah. Right.
So you're having to reroute traffic in a completely different pattern than is normal even for a game.
And you're going to add 3 to 4 times the people, potentially.
Right.
I just hope people show up. Like, I don't want to go, but I hope people show up to be a good showing.
It will be lame if it's under what are they saying, 300,000 people, right? Yeah. It's kind of the number you hear. So, yes, you're right. If only like 100,000 are there or even 200, it might feel... Not as cool. Yeah, not as cool. I feel bad for some of the businesses around there that they don't know. So, like, my brother-in-law works for a heating and cooling place nearby. And they, you know, even, like, shipments in and out, they do a lot of that
right,
stuff.
The logistics
at this particular place is there. And
that's why I've heard a lot of them are just shutting down.
Well, they're either going to try to shut down or do it earlier in the morning or kind of have a lot of that ready to go. But, yeah. For that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's going to be tricky to...
Like, even being a restaurant near there, I can't imagine. Like, because people would want to probably go to a restaurant to avoid... Because I'm sure the food from carts and stuff is going to be stupid expensive. And even if you wanted to, like, go to... Like, I don't know what restaurants will even try to be open because to get food. Like, if you have that many people and you don't plan right...
I'm sure they're planning ahead. Yeah, you wonder
they
if...
They probably are,
gonna,
but you can't.
And they're probably going to have draft
can't
menus
know what you're
that
gonna
are
have.
More expensive.
Like,
yeah. Right.
If you run out, then you just close? Like, sorry, we're out of food. See you later.
Even the amount of food trucks they're bringing in from other counties around. You know, it's like calling all food trucks to just come down here to supply people with that amount of food. So it'll be.
I know the B-Dubs is open because I heard one of the radio stations.
I figured they would be.
Yeah. One of the reasons.
Gotta be, right? I mean, you're going to.
They're right there.
The only
sports bar.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would think you're just gearing up for this. And hopefully it's not, a like you say, a flop or a disappointment for them that,
no,
that they don't get the people they expect.
I know the cops are out in force. They're everywhere. Every highway leading into Green Bay is pretty well covered lately.
Cops.
All right. You guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Yes.
It was a bit delayed there, Bill. Come on. So, all right. It's technically spring. It's not really feeling a hard, like, go time spring, though some guys have been hitting the dirt.
Yep. Yep. Todd, we were talking off air that you've got some new seating in.
A lot of new seating going in, which is good. So, yeah, it's been a... It was a good, you know, it's always a good to start in these slow spring. Like this year feels like a slow spring, or maybe more normal, I guess, versus other springs where you get that warm up in March that just gets you doing more things that in, say, early April.
I've got a guy with 200 acres of beans in that I'm crossing my fingers.
Well, it got rained on last night.
It did. So yeah.
Hopefully that was good. Means it'll germ.
Yep. And sandy, light ground. So, and I think, Todd, we were talking the other day about what fit means.
Well, you guys, yeah.
Yeah,
last week we talked about that, but then you and I were talking yesterday about what agronomists think are fit and what farmers
and it, just the definition of fit in general is, well, is quite.
And fit now versus fit a month from now is different.
Right.
And we kind of talked about that last week, too, of like, early season, you can afford to take your time, whereas calendar starts flipping towards end of May, early June. Then,
but even digging, like I was doing seed depth and making sure the planter was shutting on and off at the correct spacing yesterday, the 17th. And if I didn't know it was April 17th, I would have thought it was May 10th. Like just looking at the ground, the moisture, how it sure. was.
Oh, the moisture, right, not like the temperature.
Yeah, not the temperature, right. But just the moisture and how the soil looked and how it was digging, you know, just everything about the soil looked fit.
I feel we're very, it's very dichotomous that way. We're the moisture's that way, but as far as heat goes and greenness to everything, it's like we're still in March, you know, like we just are finally getting over that cusp of getting enough GDUs and stuff. So, yeah, it is an interesting spring.
But Sean Connolly told us we had to plant early. I hear that one more time.
And everybody's saying planter. Like, that's what I feel like is all spring. I was like, plant your beans early. Or in all fall, excuse me, all winter. And then when it hits and guys are actually doing it, and I'm like, whoa, not this early. It's, you know, so it is a very weird game of.
I meant April 22nd.
Yeah.
And that was a couple guys I talked to with the rain last night and this morning. They were worried about it being too cold of a rain. Ground not quite being ready in some of that heavier ground, and that is kind of interesting too when you look around. You know, we've talked about the drought monitor in the past, but even the moisture level north to south can vary quite a bit depending on where you go. So they're like, I'd be planting probably tomorrow, but with the rain coming, I'm just gonna wait, see what we get. Probably go next week.
You guys worried about wheat or grass?
Well, you're kind of talking about that before, too. It's kind of feast or famine. Either it looks like garbage or some of it looks actually pretty good.
I am worried about it, but we do got to be patient in making that decision. We've got to make sure it is greened up the proper amount. And the hardest, I actually struggle more with wheat than I do alfalfa because wheat a lot of times will do spring applications of nitrogen.
Yeah.
And I feel somewhat like the Grim Reaper. In that, if I don't apply the nitrogen, I'm just pulling the cord and letting it die. But if you do apply the nitrogen, then you feel like, well, now I invested this money in it, and I want to keep the wheat.
It has to go.
So it's this, whereas alfalfa, we can wait a couple more weeks. You're not going to pull it out right now anyway. You know, you're not going to go spray it. And there's options, you know, maybe you take a first crop alfalfa just to see how it is and then switch to corn. So that has a lot more windows, so that one's nice, whereas wheat, I do struggle with that one way more because, and I used to be on the side of kind of really wait and see and do less nitrogen. Now, if I have a borderline stand, I'll probably still do the, if it's still hitting like the minimum, we'll just do the nitrogen to give it a chance. And usually when we do, it'll tiller and be fine. The other thing that's changed on wheat, and Bill, you might agree with this, is the change of streamer bars in our area. I know that's common in the Dakotas and been around, but this is probably our third year of using streamer bars to apply nitrogen to wheat. And that has changed that as well, in that you're getting a much more quicker reacting nitrogen that's going to hopefully get it to tiller quicker and just do more things than the dry form.
Sure.
And both have their timings or when they work better than each other. But that got me thinking this spring of like, well, I wonder if, you know, this spring using streamer bar will get it to wake up better, quicker, as we are kind of a cooler, slower spring. But that's yet to be seen whether that's the case.
We've got a grower that calls it painting his wheat.
Painting his wheat.
Because he had a field where there was a tree kind of up against a fence line, but yet the planter went around the tree between the fence line. So there was like a little swath of wheat that planted, but he couldn't get it with a streamer bar. So he took me a picture and he's like, I just painted my wheat. Like you could literally see exactly where
he missed.
It's not like, you know, like the, with the dry fertilizer, you can kind of get it out a little further or whatever. And there's not that hard line where this was like, yep, make sure you hit every inch with the paintbrush because it does affect it. What I'm seeing in wheat, Todd, and I don't know, Matt, if you've traveled much north looking at wheat, but there's a big difference between southern Outagamie County and northern Shawano and southern O'Connell. Like there's a huge difference in what the wheat looks like. The wheat south, nice big leaves, it's tillered. If it was planted on time, it looks great. Everything to the north looks like it's literally just coming out of the ground. Like there's zero tillering. It looks like garbage. And it's like, do we keep it? Do we not? And like you said, I think we got to wait a week or two yet to really determine that. And they want to get nitrogen out, but I don't want to make that commitment yet.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't want to pull the plug and be the Grim Reaper either.
Right.
Well, you were talking about a farm worried about triticale, and I was at a farm north of the farm you were talking about, whose triticale looks really good, to the point where they're actually like kind of already making the decision. Normally, they'd wait to see how it turns out of which ones they'd harvest and not harvest for feed. And when I talked to him yesterday, he was like, yeah, no, that one I'm probably not even going to take because I got a lot of it that looks really good. So it is weird. And yesterday, too, when I was driving up there, just before Krakow on 32, there was wheat getting spread. And
I'm sure all our listeners know where Krakow, Wisconsin is. This is a big town.
It's huge.
The Twin Cities, yeah. Zacho and Krakow.
Yeah.
I mean, you just... Plus, you didn't even bring up the, I believe...
North of Pulaski.
Yes, thank you, Matt. I believe that Frank, the big entertainer in...
Shabilsky?
No, the Frank's Productions.
Oh, let me be Frank.
Yes. They're doing I believe it's King of... No.
Twin Cities?
They have like a big...
Zacho and Krakow?
No, I think it's just on Krakow. I think it's Mayor of Krakow.
That's the next Let Me Be Frank production.
Yes, there's a big production coming out. So, yes, the King of Krakow from April 3rd to the 19th. Actually, it's almost done. So by the time our listeners hear this, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Tomorrow's the last day to see the King of Krakow. If you want to learn more and you have free time this Easter weekend, as we sit here on Good Friday, with Easter being late, too, that's throwing me off all sorts.
No, it almost is perfect, Matt. I would actually say throw out the calendar. We looked the same last year at Easter as we do this year at Easter. So it's just odd that way that it is so much later than last year, because I believe it was in March last year Easter was. So it's just a different...
Right, because 2 years ago it was the 9th, I want to say, of April.
And that you know, like you say, Easter can move so much that a lot of times that's not a good thing. Where, yeah, Sunday, March 31st of 2024,
yep,
of last year was Easter, and this year it's, you know, we're a good 3 weeks later, and stuff looks the exact same. So it is odd that way that...
Have you guys put a soil thermometer in the ground?
Yeah, I don't...
Yeah, it's varied.
It's varied a lot.
If it was wet... Especially like a couple weeks ago when I first started taking soil temps, it was like the wetter ground because it was such cold water was really showing. But yeah, like you've got a farm with some soil monitoring.
It's a weather station.
Weather station in the ground. Soil. There's the Wisco net. I don't know if you guys have looked at that at all. They've got soil temp monitors and that.
This one says 44.7 at 12 inches. It seems high at 12 inches, but.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
Temperature seems high.
Yeah.
What's
it at? Is it any shallower ones? Than 12?
No, unfortunately, the only sensor with soil is at 12.
That seems very deep to put.
That's what we were seeing at like 4 inches on, on the Wisco net stuff.
Long story, Todd.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Okay, that brings up the part of the problem with soil temps is you got time of day, you got depth, you got pick a day because it's going to be different today when it's sunny versus, you know, the old adage was, you know, go at 8 a.m. basically, right? And then you go kind of that 2 to 4 inch because that's where your seed's going to be.
Yeah.
That's sort of been always adage, but I think.
All right, there's a Black Creek weather station for Wisco net, 2 inches as of 11 a.m. today. 46 degrees, 4 inches, 45.5, 8 inches, 44.4. So
I think we've seen.
Right there, man, is 44.7.
So. Yeah, that warmer rain then did seem to perk it up, which makes sense what we saw.
So that's the closest one to us. And then, yeah, you jump around, like, let's go north. I know I have a farm in Suring that's got a station. Let's see what they're at. Yeah, actually warmer than here. 48 degrees at 2 inches in Suring. So,
which kind of goes to the point of like we were talking to Todd about this year versus last year, and we're well behind on GDUs,
right?
Yeah.
So running, I would have thought this was more than a change, but you start thinking about it makes some sense. But if you run a GDU calculator right now, and this is using base 40, so for like alfalfa and winter wheat. Because base 50 is going to be a little different. But just saying base 40, we're right now at 177 GDUs. And last year at this time, we were at 311. So if you're going to compare date to date, it'd be like April 7th of last year. So we're, say, 10 days, 2 weeks behind.
Yep.
It feels like more than that, but 10 days, 2 weeks, you know, that when, say, we re-listen to this podcast 10 days from now, we're going to go, well, you know, a lot more changed and, you know, things happen that, again, just being patient sometimes and looking at things like GDUs is very valuable because you can not worry about what the calendar says and you can worry about what, you know, what should be happening at that GDU mark.
Well, and all winter long, we had some pretty significant temperature swings. We would be really cold, then get warm and get cold. And we've been a little more consistent in the last month or so. I mean, not to say that we haven't had our highs and lows, but not as drastic of a change and probably closer to average temperatures, like what they should be this time of year, this year too. So it's interesting, Bill, you had this one GDU calculator that I was looking at from Cornell. And that one, when you look at the 15 and 30 year average, we're behind based on those. But even those two are almost 10 GDUs apart. Whether you go for the 30-year normal, as they call it, on the chart, or the 15-year average. So fluctuations is just the name of the game when it comes to a lot of this stuff.
So the bottom line is we still need to be patient.
Right.
Even though it's, you know, back, we're in the second half of April now, let's still be patient on those wheat fields and don't condemn them yet, unless you can clearly see parts of the fields that are brown and parts of the fields that are 2 inches tall, right? I mean, there's going to be fields you're going to know that, okay, this is, even if it does wake up, it's still way behind the rest of it. And if the percentage of the field matters, so if it's a big percentage of field, well, then you can make that determination.
Yeah, Bill and I both have farms that are doing some NOPP work this year involving wheat. We had a meeting earlier this week, and that was one of the discussion points was, okay, what happens if the wheat doesn't come out of it?
Like, doesn't look good.
Like, this wasn't, you know, when we're talking about this project, it wasn't the thought we really had even going into the fall of, like, maybe we won't have wheat to plant these. In this case, the project is planting legume covers afterwards, look at, try to figure out crediting. But, yeah, it's like, okay, what happens if we don't get the wheat, because in order to plant the covers, the timing we want to plant them, we need something. to be there around wheat timing, so we had to come up with some alternatives. And we don't know for sure yet. Like Bill was saying, we got to be patient, but we got to have options if it doesn't come out of it.
I think the other thing, we all know that planting date matters, but I think this year it really shows. It's really showing
right.
Planting date matters.
And we were...
Of winter wheat.
Yeah.
But two things are out of that. Like super early, like say after prevent plant, could have been too early. Could have. They're going to be fine. But
actually, those of mine look the best.
Right. They do. Yeah. I had a few of them where they got really tall. And just,
oh, right. Almost like, too tall.
Yeah. And they'll be fine. But late, like there was definitely a big mark between what was planted. Because we were talking about, like I had one guy planted a neighbor's wheat right before his, planted his own. Neighbor's look good. His doesn't look good. And it was basically one was planted September 30th. His was planted October 13th. And yeah, of course, that's going to matter. And we even had kind of a late warm fall.
Right. And it got dry too. So some of those later ones didn't really germinate
as
very quickly.
Yeah.
Todd, you were saying, what's your rule of thumb on like days to wake up?
Right. So this goes to like bringing it. And I was trying to find if there is a like amount of GDUs to start scouting or something like that. And in general, there's not. One of them that pops up is harvesting first crop is at 700 GDUs normally. So that's one thing to think about is when we'd harvest first crop alfalfa. But like say to assess your winter wheat or your alfalfa, like after so many times, you know, so many GDUs that there isn't sort of a rule of thumb. One thing I have seen is when we pull in buckets, so we go dig up wheat or alfalfa, you know, a couple times in March and early April, bring it in inside in a bucket, and 2 to 3 days of 70 degrees, so it's inside at 70, not necessarily, I mean, just in a sunny window a little bit, but not even a south-facing window necessarily, but just getting that heat and that soil to warm up. But if we can get air temps for 3 days at 70, that's when I see it. Then it's time to go look. And not necessarily 70, like a day of 70, then 2 weeks, a day of 70. It's almost like 2 days consecutively of hitting that. This year, it does seem like it took for sure like almost 3 days. Like with how cold the winter was, with how last fall was, it went into a fairly heavy dormancy, especially the older alfalfa. So our second year stands, they're greening up quicker. 30 years, they're in the middle, but like fourth, fifth, sixth, older year fields, they're taking forever to green up. They're just very hard into dormancy, and they're going to need a little more heat to just wake up. And again, be patient to let them green up.
Yeah, so, in those older stands, I've even seen, you know, perfectly healthy-looking crowns that have no vegetative matter on them yet next to ones that do. So
right. You've
got some genetic diversity in those plants too, so some of them are waking up quicker than others. So it's interesting to see how those will impact the overall stand once we get a little bit warmer weather. All right, well, there you go. There's a look at what we've got out in the field right now. Name of the game is still kind of wait and see, but, you know, everyone's ground's going to be a little different. Like we said, there's a lot of difference just going south to north through the state. So maybe it's time for you to go, maybe not, but just keep an eye on things and make smart decisions when you can. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So 14 unique editions of the Farm Progress. Well, highlight leaders, innovators, and advocates as part of the Ag Media Company's Women in the Field initiative. So coming in May, Farm Progress will honor women's agriculture contributions through 14 complimentary digital editions. As part of the Women in the Field initiative, each regional publication features the stories of bold, creative women redefining the future of farming from the fields to the White House. Agriculture is a tremendously challenging business, and we need to all the smart and capable minds available to work out solutions, said Mike Wilson, senior executive editor for Farm Progress. The Women in Field digital editions tackle the challenges at the center of our national ag conversation. So the May editions featuring a lineup of women who are leading across the ag landscape include Brooke Rollins, who is the second woman ever to lead USDA, Temple Grandin, world-renowned advocate for animal welfare and people with autism, some Army Reserve veterans transforming military displan into a thriving mushroom farm, three farm daughters who are building a pasta brand that brings their family-grown grain to kitchen tables across America, and several more. So be interesting to see who all 14 end up being across the month of May. But
I've actually heard the three, what did you say, three farm?
Three farm daughters.
I've heard commercials.
Sure.
For that.
And I think we've all heard of Temple Grandin. She was
mm-hmm.
in the area a few years ago, I think. I remember she came and talked to them. It might be longer ago than I think even. All right, now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. Wrong music.
Song. Yeah.
Got it. Takes a week off, can't
run the board. Hit.
All right, today we're going to talk growing degree days or heat units. So not a coincidence that many have heard of the Farmer's Almanac. Farmers spend a lot of their lifetime tracking the weather. How much and when it rains, freezes, and thaws can make the difference between boom or bust for a year's crop. However, temperature can predict more than boom or bust. Atmospheric temperature can predict the growth rates of many plants. For this reason, growers use a concept called growing degree days, or GDD, sometimes called heat units, sometimes called GDUs. And the GDD relate air temperature to plant growth, development, and maturity. French scientist René A.F. de Remire introduced the idea of the GDD in 1730. Since that time, GDD has been used as a means to predict the growth stages of many living things, plants, and animals. GDD is based on the idea that development of a plant will occur only when the temperature exceeds a specific base temperature for a certain number of days. Each type of plant is adapted to grow best over its specific base temperature, called the T-base. Even cultivars of the same plant species sometimes have a different base. So that's why when we mention base 40, base 50, depending on what crop we're talking about, is where you start looking at GDDs or GDUs. So we count one GDD for every 24-hour period during which the average temperature is 1 degree greater than the T-base. If the average temperature is 2 degrees above T-base, then we count two GDDs and so on. It's also important to remember that a Celsius degree day is not the same as a Fahrenheit degree day because Celsius degrees are almost twice as large as Fahrenheit degrees. It takes 9 Fahrenheit degree days to make 5 Celsius degree days. So if you're talking to somebody across the pond where they're using the metric system, their GDDs are going to look different than ours. So,
do you guys use? So, I've heard
this, I use Fahrenheit.
Yeah. Okay. I was curious. We should just switch up. Sometimes I always want to do that. Just put things in hectares per, per liter especially given a manure rate. I feel like that'd be. But no,
that could get dangerous.
Or I've always and I've never seen it, but use metric units with. Our American unit, go acres per liter or something like that, liters per acre. Just really be what? Do you guys, okay, so my question is, do you guys use growing degree days, growing degree units, or heat units? Which do you say?
Is all in choice?
I'd say most of the time it's probably GDUs, but second would be GDDs. Heat units, I would say, would be third.
Third, yeah. It's wild because they're literally, we use some of that interchangeably and it's maybe slightly different, like relative feed value versus relative feed quality or technically. I always use them the same, but I know they're
different. Yeah.
Whereas this, it's literally the same. And I feel like I mainly use degree units as well, but it's this kind of depend. Yeah. Just different people say it differently. I don't know. Yeah. It's odd that we have the same thing for multiple
manure.
Yeah.
It's all Greek to us. Or maybe Latin, depending on the base of the word. But So there you go. There's a look at why we use growing degree units or growing degree days and how it affects your crops.
All right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's very easy. In Apple Podcasts, search Tilth Talk Radio, and there you'll find us. Or on your Android phone, download an app like Podcast Addict, and there you can also search Tilth Talk Radio. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts. We're now available on Amazon Music as well. So it's another place you can find it. Actually, it's called Google Podcasts. Excuse me. Google Podcasts. You can also follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. More certainty for E15 come summertime. So supporters of year-round E15 are looking forward to more certainty this summer driving season. Renewable Fuels Association CEO Jeff Cooper says EPA is allowing several states to sell fuel blended with 15% ethanol between June and September. We at least know that in 7 states you're going to be able to see year-round E15 this summer. Those states are preparing and ready for that. Those states include Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. He also says that President Trump has also said if there's no legislative solution for year-round E15 by this summer, his administration would strongly consider issuing emergency waivers for the rest of the nation. And he said, I think that is a reflection of E15 saving consumers money at the pump, but it also protects the market for farmers and ensures that we're growing opportunities and keeping markets open for our friends in agriculture. All right, our That's Corny this week. Bayer, say it ain't so, says they may stop making Roundup. So Bayer's CEO is warning that the company may have to stop making Roundup, the popular weed killer that is also the cause of thousands of lawsuits from people claiming that exposure to it has caused non-Hodgkin lymphoma. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Bill Anderson reiterated concern about manufacturing the herbicide. He said, we're pretty much reaching the end of the road. We're talking months, not years. We barely break even on glyphosate production and distribution. And if you factor in litigation, you're talking $2 billion to $3 billion in losses a year, Anderson said. Bayer brought in $2.8 billion from glyphosate sales last year. So in some years, the cost of litigation has surpassed the company's research and development budget. Bayer has also recently filed a petition with the Supreme Court. Seeking review of a state court decision in Missouri awarding $1.25 billion to a man who used the product. Bayer argues that the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, or FIFRA, preempts state failure to warn claims. So, be a sad day to not have Roundup.
It's actually kind of big.
It's huge news. I've actually want to write an episode. We got to talk about this, like a full-on episode, because this has very much implications, especially to just completely remove, pull that out from under us. And, I actually, from Bayer's standpoint, I mean, if those lawsuits and all that, and they're not making money on it, obviously they've got to weigh all those decisions out, so.
Yeah, usually it's California or somewhere giving away stupid amounts of money, but $1.25 billion to somebody? Like, what is... I'd really like to see the breakdown of how you even justify that value. I'm sure in appeals and everything else it drops, but...
No, and there's...
That's kind of the crazy part of court cases, how they start super high, and then sometimes they end up getting nothing, but it's just why you'd even throw a number out that big.
Just keep going up, right? As these lawsuits keep going through, like the number just keeps getting bigger.
Yeah, there's been several that have been in the billions to start, and it just seems kind of ludicrous. But anyway, now we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. This week we're looking at Wisconsin leading the charge for rural health care. So the need for more rural doctors is continuously growing in the state of Wisconsin. The issue is now being addressed by special organizations, including the Wisconsin Collaborative for Rural WCRGME, or if you want to go with the acronym, WCRGME. Laurie Rodefield, or Feld, the director of rural GME with the organization, said that they are working to meet the needs of rural areas. We work with the residency programs throughout the state of Wisconsin and right now have 28 rural residency programs. Also have 7 more in development. She explains that they have 65 incoming residents that will be doing some form of rural training in Wisconsin. Many of these residents will be doing 12 to 18 months of rural training. With these residencies, only 2% nationally take place in rural areas, while those areas hold 20% of the population. That is the issue they're working to fix. So out of middle school schools that are in Wisconsin, Rodefield said they average around 30 to 35% staying in the state for residency. To go along with this, a study done by WARM shows that 50% of Wisconsin medical students stay in Wisconsin to practice or come back to the state to practice. Also shows that 70% of residents will stay within 100 miles of where they did their training. So there are incentives being used to help keep these students in the state as well. A big one is loan repayment. This is a large selling point for many students that will graduate medical school with $200,000 to $300,000 in debt. Some groups also have their own incentives, like giving scholarships to students who promise to return and work for a set number of years. So, always trying to do what's best, and looks like they're hoping to improve the quality of healthcare for those in rural areas. So, it's a cool thing. That'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So, this week we talked about what's going on out in the field. Have a little patience with your alfalfa, grass, wheat crops. Soil temps are getting there, but not really making big jumps. In our spotlight, we took a look at the Farm Progress digital magazines that will be coming out next month, focusing on women in ag. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of growing degree days. Cool beans this week, more certainty for E15 come summer. That's corny, Bayer may stop making Roundup altogether. And our Field Good Friday was Wisconsin leading the charge for rural healthcare. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.